session number 23378, reel 13.
Came from?
Sorry, continue with your story of the syllabes.
The second job we had to do was to look after the agriculture production in the area. It was the centre of the rice growing district of the syllabes, from which their main food supply came from. And I used to have a conference with the old Dutch colonial people every morning. They were technically administering the area still. Indonesia hadn't come into being yet. And the commander of the Dutch people, he was an old Dutch colonial civil servant, who died in the war colonialist. A man called Pettermores. And his assistant was a young man who had been in the Dutch resistance, fought in Europe, and was understanding the new way of thinking about colonial possessions. And each morning we would have this conference as to what he was going to do during the day, where he was going. It's necessary to do that because of the fact that there were still the Hi-Hos, Japanese-trained local activist unit, and the population was still pretty much Japanese-minded. And they used to have arguments every morning about the past and the future, Dutch-wise. It's the future of the Dutch colonial, and the future of the Netherlands East Indies. It used to be great fun trying to sort their views out. I was in favour of the young man. Not that I exhibited that very often.
What were some of the views that you would try and sort out with them?
Oh, he wanted to do it the old way of the Dutch being, just had to lift their finger and everyone had to obey. He reasoned moves out before he wanted them implemented to the young man. He knew that a new wave was coming and best accommodated. He was a visionary. Delight to work with, really. So in between administering our own unit and that of the country and the Japanese, it was a busy time, interesting time.
Sort of envisaging the coming of the new way, the new world. One of the things that really dawned was the coming about of the end of the war and how that occurred and what possibly that might mean for the future in relation to warfare. What were your views and understanding at the time of the use and dropping of the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and then Nagasaki, the 6th and 9th of August?
I don't think I had any views about it at all. It was the instrument by which the war ended. I think in my own thinking, it went just as far as that. It was a trigger of a release. The whys and wherefores, the rights and wrongs of it, were a matter for the future. But I had nothing to do with it. We were grateful that something had ended it. I think possibly as things transpired over the coming months, when we heard what it really meant by way of injury and permanent injury, perhaps we're starting to formulate views about it, but I don't think I had any myself. I was never one for being an activist for any cause or otherwise. Look at the facts. Leave it at that.
With administering the Japanese, how did you see their view of the end of the war?
I have to assume it was quite complacent. In the early days between the two wars, there used to be visits of Japanese naval ships to Melbourne, especially around Cap Day. You used to see them taking photos of every possible conceivable item of interest to them. As we know, they're great photo takers. Anyway, Tsushima asked me, "Where do you come from?" I said, "Melbourne." Oh, he said, "Ah, lovely place." I said, "How do you know it?" He said, "I used to come out as a midshipman in the Japanese Navy." And he said, "You go to the Melbourne Cup, Colonel?" I said, "No, I've never been to the Melbourne Cup." He said, "You're not telling me the truth." I said, "I am. Never been to it. Nor have I ever since." I said, I tried to explain to him I wasn't a racing man and so on. But when he knew that we were leaving in January 46, he sent me a personal letter with his aide, and followed up by a further visit of himself with his personal sword, a letter of thanks for the way in which we had conducted ourselves as victors. Still got those letters, still got the sword. It's under my beard. They were interesting times. Home to Brisbane, up the Brisbane River one Sunday, and the river banks were lined with people, as they did with every troop ship coming home. Within a few days I was on a train bound for Melbourne, having signed a paper that all stores were properly accounted for, and at 3 o'clock one afternoon the battalion was at an end. The troops had been dispatched to all quarters, parts of Australia, as quickly as possible. It was excellent disbursement. I was shocked by the speed with which the battalion was ended. A sheet of paper and a signature, telling a lie that all stores. That's all they wanted. Down to Melbourne by train, long journey. Waiting on the platform was Pat, a small car, and in it a baby boy. I'd had leave in January 45 for a few days. Off we drove. It was a hot day, bloody hot day. Off we drove to our flat. So began life as Citizen Road.
This sudden change from army to citizen to civilian, had it come as a shock?
It was a shock, yes. It was a shock. Because overnight you were doing something totally different. You'd seek out your mates and have a drink with them, talking about the funny things that happened during the war and how they were getting on. That for a while took up too much time. Pat began to notice it. Then it came a question of what I was going to do with life.
Well, there was this sort of, often I get the impression that it was important for chaps. It had been such an important part of their life for quite some time, and it was difficult to just shrug it off.
Oh, you can't just pull the curtain down like a stage performance on it. It's a tremendous upheaval in your mind.
People talk of post-traumatic stress and things like that now. I assume this wouldn't have been discussed.
I should have been cancelled, because there's no such thing in those days. But gradually it wore off and we settled down to an all existence. I had to make up my mind what I was going to do with it. go back into the practice or go out on my own or what I was going to do. It was all upheaval.
How long would you say it took for you to adjust, to get back in to normal civilian thinking?
Oh, I couldn't put a time limit on it in any shape or form. It'd be impossible.
To what degree would your experience of the Second World War still affect you, 60 years on?
It does still affect me, especially now when people are starting to die. I've got a letter over there now writing to a widow of a fellow who was an excellent bloke, and that sort of thing keeps cropping up and it's growing in intensity at the moment. We had over 3,000 people through the battalion in the course of the war. We've got 300 left. They're dying off at a fast rate.
In relation to what had been achieved, what the Second World War had done, can you put an idea on that?
What, for me or for things
to... For you, for everyone. How did you see what you've been involved with in looking back?
I've got a different view now to what I would have had then. Immediately you'd think of, well, I've been part of a great adventure, been part of a great thing of freedom and justice in the world. Australia had taken its part and I'd been part of what Australia had done. Looking at it from a pure military point of view, I see over a great unit as maintain the traditions of its predecessor in World War One.
World War One had been the war to end all wars.
That's right. This has been one to recover freedom, and the world has been at it ever since. That's the distressing part. We don't seem to be able to, as a world, as a global entity, we don't seem to be able to settle down. There are two cancerous spots in the world, aren't there? More than most. Ireland and Middle East. Especially the Middle East has got the capacity to bring us all down.
You mentioned earlier on the Arabs pinching your rifles.
Yeah.
Been going on for a while.
Yeah. It's been going on since the Crusaders, hasn't it? One wonders about religion. It's got an infinite capacity for division, whereas it should be a capacity to bring together people. It seems to work the other way.
Given your understanding now, how would you approach the Second World War if you were given the second chance?
The circumstances have been the same as the beginning of the war. And I was young again. I would do the same. Join up. That's me. That's a hypothetical question, isn't it? Can't equate all the factors that would enter into it.
People ask the question what Kokoda was all about. And you mentioned the saving of Australia from Japanese invasion. People still have the problem with Japanese, with the situation. Some people might even say that they've taken over Australia in a different way.
Alliances in the world changed, don't they? And our relationship with Japan has changed. They're our allies now. We need them from a trade point of view, I suppose. We need to be friends with them. There must be few Australians that would hold the view that they can forgive but not forget. I would readily, for myself, become friendly with the Japanese. Because I've seen it firsthand, what had happened. But I don't need to invite them into the home. So I haven't had that problem. Although I was chairman of a public company, they were importers and exporters of various materials and things. They developed an agency with the Japanese, and the managing director of the company said, "I'm going to have a dinner party for these Japanese executives that are out here." Oh, so Christ, that's how I'm going to go along to this. So Pat and I went along to this occasion. They couldn't speak English and I couldn't speak Japanese. We got along famously because we didn't have to speak terribly much to each other. I thought I'd won a victory across that night. Needs must when the devil drives. You have to take stock of what your objectives are and fit yourself into trying to do something about attaining them.
One thing I find with interviewing people about their involvement in the Second World War is it's obviously still a very strong emotional experience for them.
Oh, it is.
So, in summing up, or what final words would you give to your experience?
I value the comradeship and the trust of the fellows I've come in contact with. And I shall do everything in my power to see that that is maintained, and if an opportunity arises to help them for that trust and comradeship, I shall do so. I have an example to give you of one of our fellows. He was living in rooms in South Melbourne. And one day in my office I was rung up by a barrister, latterly to become a judge and now deceased, who was defending this man for murder in the Supreme Court of Victoria. And The accused has mentioned my name as being his CO in the war, and I might give a character reference before sentencing. And the barrister, whom I shall call Gordon, rang me and said, can you come up and help? And I said, Gordon, I don't think I can. This fellow is not very hot, you know. Troublesome sort of character. He said, he says you can help him. Won't you do it? I said, yes, okay, I'll do it. And we arranged to meet in the cells under the Supreme Court. And he told me what he had done. He pulled out a rifle out of his wardrobe at this lodging place, and he was a bit full. If I had a fellow he was arguing with, point blank range. I got up to give character evidence, and I had to remember that I had to tell the truth, nothing but the truth, because I'd taken the oath. And also, as a solicitor, I was an officer of the Supreme Court. I had to make certain I didn't transgress. On treading a narrow line, I pointed out that this fellow was a member of the battalion. He was a great soldier in action, and developed that theme in action. Didn't touch the other part at all. Gordon asked me a few questions along the same lines. The judge asked one or two. And finally, the judge had given him a sentence, and I forget what it was. It was some years imprisonment. Yet he wasn't sent for life or anything like that. And he said, I've taken into consideration a very excellent character reference made by his commanding officer. I felt satisfied I'd done my best for this fellow. I told the truth, confining it to a certain aspect of his life. And so it would be for any others that not in such serious circumstances. If I can help anyone, I'll continue to do so in repayment for the trust they reposed in me. I was a citizen soldier.
Would you like to finish it there?
Mm.
Thank you very much for your time and your help.
Good, I hope it is. You're able to achieve something with it.